you know, will be the stars of YouTube and influencers in no time. I just one quick final word on Jonathan Pollard. It was one of President Trump's last acts as president to pardon Aviem Sella, who was the Mossad agent who recruited Jonathan Pollard. So we see this kind of continuity here, you know. Pollard is now living in Israel. And yeah, it's a really wild story when you think about it.
Yeah. Amazing.
Well, thank you both. It's always fun to do this, so we're happy to do it again.
Thanks, Ali.
Excellent. Thanks, Ali. That's it for the Electronic Intifada podcast. Thanks to Sharif Zakout, our music maker and production assistant. For news, information, cultural features and reviews, and pointed opinion and analysis, visit us online at electronicintifada.net, where you can also post comments and sign up for our daily email digest. Follow us on Twitter at Intifada. Radio stations are free to use this podcast, and if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, support the Electronic Intifada by rating it and leaving a review. On behalf of all of us at the Electronic Intifada, thank you for listening.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from PDX Pendable Stage and Studio Supplies. PDX Pendable sells and rents to film and theater productions, from gel and globes to paint and lights, featuring the latest Arri LED lighting. More information available at 503-887-5880 and at pdxpendables.com.
I'm Dime Roberts, stage and studio. We're listening to music from Portland composer and musician David Ornette Cherry. You can hear more of his music at davidornettecherry.com. I'm Dime Roberts, and with me via Zoom is James Dixon, actor, director, activist, reporter, and also occasional guest host back in the day of stage and studio. And James, it has been a while since we've talked. I think a long while.
Yes, it has.
Yeah.
It has. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's good to see you because we're on Zoom and also to hear your voice. I need to ask you, have you been to the protests? Have you been able to do that? Because I haven't been able to because of, you know, I'm up there in the years and I don't want to get sick. But
honestly, I haven't, not physically anyway. I personally have attended many protests in the past. I'm a huge advocate of seeing younger folks and mostly white people out there protesting, especially living in Portland. When I, you know, all I can think of is me being surrounded by a bunch of white people and being a target, a visible target for police officers, not just police officers, white supremacists that are out there. They are definitely out there. I have been watching live streams from home. So for several reasons, I want to make sure that I'm getting the facts that are on the ground. And most importantly, I've got some friends that are out there that need to know what's going on. So I'd had 7 different feeds from friends that I'd known. And if something was happening down the street, I'd let them know that this is happening. If somebody needs some money for some resources, I'll Cash App them or even be ready to go pick somebody up just so I can make sure that I'm available. But I have PTSD and I just can't be down there.
I also appreciate the way you have been reporting on things that have happened. You know, people post Facebook Live stuff and you've been reporting on stuff and providing resources. And I think it's important to remember there are a lot of ways to support this. A lot of ways.
Right. This,
including donating money.
It's like
money.
A huge... Right. The whole world's on fire. It's like, well, I can't protest. It's like, you can watch this feed and educate yourself. You can support... Black Lives Matter or Hands Up Don't Shoot, or if you don't support either one of those, I mean, it's Pride Month. How about supporting a trans group? Black trans folks are at risk right now. What does it mean to go pick somebody up that needs a ride, that needs somebody to need some money? Like, there's all types of ways to get involved. And for theater companies, you know, there's a multitude of ways to get involved with this type of thing as well.
Well, a lot of theater companies are actually providing spaces in their lobby, like Portland Center Stage is doing that for protesters.
Also Shaking the Trees, is making themselves available to
help. You know, a lot of ways to help. I'm just wondering, too, because you mentioned PTSD, but, you know, we are in a time of crisis. How do you find comfort? What comforts you?
It's just such an interesting time because, I mean, COVID-19 happened and I was like, oh, maybe we'll hunker down. And and then on top of that, we're in a pandemic and now we're in the middle of social reform. And then like unemployment's going up. No one's got resources. And, you know, I've been actually really lucky. I have a full-time job outside of what I do in the art scene, and I've been working full time, so that's been okay. I have been just connecting with my inner circle of people that I really enjoy spending time with to make sure that they're okay. That gives me comfort. If someone doesn't have any food, if someone is, hey, I don't have any resources, I will send them money and I won't ask for it back. And I, you know, I'm not wealthy, but I've got more resources than a lot of people I know, so that gives me comfort. I love being outdoors. I love meditating. I did a reading series for a couple of weeks, which is a meditative practice called Feeding Your Demons. So I had a live feed for that. And I, you know, honestly, this is my first time doing video, as much video as I've done in the past, like FaceTime and house party. There's so many ways to stay connected. So I've really enjoyed that so far.
Yeah, I never even heard of Zoom before all of this. So it's been, I feel like I've been really connected to a lot of people. You know, that way.
My job uses it for, I've been using it for work. Well, I'm on my day job, so I've always already acclimated, but it's been interesting trying to get people caught up on etiquette and security and what we can and can't do and backgrounds, things like that. So that's been interesting.
Well, I also want to congratulate you on becoming a member of Fuse Theater Ensemble. You did such a great job directing Booty Candy. I know you said it was your first directing gig, but it was so great. And honestly, I think that you could have directed earlier because you were so good. It was such a great production. I'm looking forward to other things you might be doing as a director.
I feel so lucky to be a part of that whole, I don't know. It's just, it feels like a movement more than anything else. I really just want more contemporary Black work to be happening, more Black queer work to be happening, more non-cis white male normative theater to be happening. And so who's going to direct that? You know, like, it's, I know I can think of maybe one other Black queer director in this town that I can think of off the top of my head. So how do we rise to that occasion? How do we create work for folks? I loved having the opportunity to create work for folks and work with Fuse. People loved the show and I was grateful for that. But honestly, I was surrounded by the best people. I was more than okay with saying I don't know an answer to something, which I think is the most important answer a director can give, to say I don't know, and being open to self-critique and imagining everyone in the room as co-conspirators, co-collaborators. We're all here to do some work together, so I feel really lucky, so thanks for mentioning that.
Like I said, I hope you have some projects that, you know, after all of this is done, that you'll be able to do, you know.
I am working on it. I personally would love to see a Black queer festival happening in this town. And now that I'm with Fuse, that's something I'd love to talk to them more about. I'm brand new, so I'm not endorsing that right now because I can't really speak for Fuse in this moment, but that is something that's on my mind that I would love to see happening. Even if someone else is doing it, I think there's a huge movement behind that where, you know, Outright could potentially partner with other theater companies that are doing queer work, and we can work together doing this work and celebrating what it means to be queer, especially after we just had the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall riots just last year, and we're canceling Pride this year. I would love to see us do something even bigger when we come back, hopefully come back to reconvening together next summer.
Oh, so nothing is happening for Pride Month, even virtually?
There are a few. I know Mystery Box is doing a Pride edition, and they do sexual storytelling, and all of their proceeds are going to Hands Up, Don't Shoot, Black Lives Don't Matter. That's happening. I know that Pride Northwest has made a statement about Black Lives Matter and has reached out. The president has reached out to me with some advice, and they're getting into the community about ways that they can be better, which is great. But I don't see any major virtual events happening. They're definitely happening here and there, but nothing I've seen as far as a major entity right now.
Well, I know that you've been really outspoken about Black trans deaths, you know, because that's not really publicized that much either, you know. And for people who don't know, Outright Theater Festival usually happens during this month, during Pride Month. So, and that's part of the Fuse Theater Ensemble.
We actually, there was a trans woman that was found in Rocky Butte Park just a few days ago. And her family found out from a Facebook post. They didn't even contact the family. And what's happening with George Floyd is huge. But honestly, it's just like enough is enough. Like for me, I it's not that I didn't feel anything when he died, but I didn't really have a huge feeling surrounding it because I'm just so accustomed to it that I'm saying to myself, like, why now? And what are we losing focus of? So I'd love to see more focus on that because they're definitely at risk. And that's part of the work that I'm doing as well.
In case you just joined us, I'm Dime Roberts, stage and studio via Zoom with James Dixon, theater artist and activist. And if you missed any of this show, you can hear the podcast on stageandstudio.org or kboo.fm/stageandstudio. James, what are your other affiliations in Portland Theater? Because I know for a while you worked with several different organizations.
Right. Right now, Fuse is primarily it. I am working towards filling some of these gaps that we're having with theater companies. Some theater companies don't know if they're staying open or not. I personally am doing what I can to make sure that I'm doing the work of the people. So I'm starting to do more work with other partners for community conscious theater. That's all I can say on that right now because we haven't really released anything, but that is something I'm doing. I'm also directing a 360 virtual reality documentary called Genderfication, which is centered around trans, femme, and non-binary humans of color. We're 2 years into that and hopefully finishing that within the next month. So that's something I'm really excited about as well. I just termed off of the paddleboard today, but I still plan on keeping connected with them and hopefully having chats with organizations about how they can move forward. And I want to be clear that when I say having chats, I mean making suggestions, recommendations on where they can go to find the information, not necessarily giving it away for free.
Yeah, PATA is the Portland Area Theater Alliance, just so people know about that. And also, yes, cultural consultation. And, you know, you have been doing a lot of consults. And we're at a time right now, because it's a big discussion right now in the arts world nationally about equity, diversity, and inclusion, EDI. And I remember these discussions since, you know, I've been in Portland in the 90s, you know, in the performing arts, in films, in public radio. I mean, I find that people are eager to make these changes, but they're also quick to get back to some kind of norm, too. What are some of the... you led a recent EDI workshop, or you were part of a recent EDI workshop. I'd like to find out more about that and how that went.
I was actually a guest. There's a gentleman by the name of Matthew Reynolds who does a lot of work down in I believe he works down in Ashland. And then there's also Orion Bradshaw, and they have this workshop where a theater company, either locally or remotely, can hire them to kind of lead them through a 6-week course of EDI training through an equity focus. And this theater company has everyone from the board of directors, from every other department that works in that theater company, which is exactly the type of training that I recommend all arts organizations and companies go through during a time like this, if this is actually really important to them. I did a podcast with the Actors' Nightmare discussing the night I did Dutchman, and our show was protested. You were there when it happened.
I was there that night. You want to fill the audience in on what happened that night?
Yes. So this was about four years ago. I was doing Trifles, and also which went into Dutchman with Defunct Theater. And one of our actors was a newer actor that had an issue with the racist language that was happening. And this actor staged a protest. And he staged the protest during the performance, which was highly unexpected by all parties in the room except for him and the protesters that came storming into the space about 10 minutes prior. They staged, he stopped me before my monologue, which you never got to get, and basically gave a spoken word poetry bit about no amount of money being worth his mental health, and tore up his contract, and they all walked out. And that was a very tough night. It was a very tough night.
Just to backtrack, that's The Dutchman by Leroy.
Amiri Baraka. Yeah, Leroy Jones. Yeah, Leroy Jones. He also went by Amiri Baraka.
And in that, from the audience perspective, I was sitting there. You're right. 10 minutes before your big speech, there were four young people with huge backpacks and duffel bags who came in the middle and then started opening up these duffel bags. And I felt like, oh, my gosh. What's going to happen? See, I was personally freaking out because I thought, oh no, you know, is this going to be something like, you know, a shootout or something, right?
Right.
And then when that happened, and the reaction you had, I wonder from your perspective, could that all have been avoided?
Well, that's a great question to ask because that is exactly why this workshop was happening. They listened to this podcast and they were looking at ways. So how do we keep this from happening? Or what we as arts administrators and producers and directors, how do we look at this situation and decide how we would have handled it and or how we prepare our organizations for work like this? And honestly, even with what's happening now, it's such a full circle experience with what's happening with these protests. I think it's really important that any producers that decide to do any non-white centric work should consider why they're doing it. Why are we doing this work? Do we have the right people in the room? Every actor, every director, anyone working on that work should also ask themselves why they're doing this work. Should they be in the room? That's the first question that should be answered to begin with. Two, it's you know, casting wise, I get asked to do a lot of things and I'm very grateful to be offered work, but I don't like the feeling of feeling as though I should feel grateful for getting work. So, you know, I think that mentality is what makes people think they can just ask anyone to step into these roles. And that's nothing against defunct at all, but just on a larger sense of things, what are these actors going through? I think you know, the language is there. So I'm not sugarcoating this. We're actors. We have jobs to do. But there's a lot of trust that needs to get built before we, you know, bring people in the room. When we ask actors to show up for work every day, they're not just bringing their talents, they're bringing their lives and their barriers and their pain. And that is something that people have to start thinking about, especially now with this movement that's happening, putting up posters about Black Lives Matter and having spaces that still perpetuate these injustices on stage and off stage. It's actually the same conversation.
Yeah, I totally get that. You know, the room is important because it signifies the power structures that are in play.
Right.
And I'm sure you've seen this, the calls for people to, of late, there have been calls for people to report racism in predominantly white theater institutions. There's one document that's going around that's called Dear White American Theater, and I'm sure you've seen that. Many of the points are, you know, ring true, but a couple of them are like, we have watched you inadequately compare us to each other, allowing the failure of entire productions to be attributed to decisions you forced upon us for the comfort of white patrons. Very true. Meanwhile, you continue to deprioritize the broadening of your audiences. That's one that comes to my heart, too, by building no relationship with our communities. And how often does that happen, you know, when you do a cultural play and it's all 95% white people in the audience? Another paragraph is asking, and this happens with a lot as far as actors and people who might be on staff to do the emotional labor of writing these EDI statements.
Right.
To be the faces on brochures, to be at board meetings and galas, you know?
Right.
So there's a lot more of this document, Dear White American Theater. And I hope that these can be the beginning points of really deep reflection, you know, and introspection.
Right. The thing that's, I've experienced an array of emotions, and I'm very emotionally mature. I just turned 40 this year. I know I got a lot of growing to do, but the emotions I felt in the past 2 weeks, I can't even put names to them. And I think a lot of it is just like what you said. You've been in this game longer than I have, and you're one of my, always been one of my mentors, and now I'm halfway, I'm only a third, maybe, I don't know where I'm at in the game, but I'm frustrated because now we're talking about this. George is not, George is the catalyst, you know. You know, this COVID-19 madness is the catalyst. These problems have always been here. Why are we attacking? Why are we doing this now? And so people would say, well, at least we're doing it. It's like, yeah, we're doing it until it's not fashionable anymore. You know, yes, everyone. I mean, I've had a lot of board offers. Oh, we got to get more people to call on your board. Yes, you do. We got to get more. You got to get them on your staff. But, you know, before you start, you know, please don't invite me to your house if you haven't cleaned. So, like, you know, I don't want to come to your house and eat if the plates are dirty. If the plate's dirty, there's, you know, it's like asking me to come eat, putting some food on the plate, and then throwing it on the floor for me to eat. That's literally what it's like joining some organizations where you're the only person of color, and then they want you in a room, and then you raise your voice, and then you said a little too much. And then you know what I mean. We can't get too loud, and we can't get too angry, we can't get too shifty, because you're ungrateful, and that is literally the lip service we're getting. And I get a lot of emails from people that they want more diversity. Well, you know, equity needs to come first. You need to clean your house first, and then you can start inviting the company over so we can break bread.
And I'm really honored that you consider me somewhat of a mentor, because I also consider you a mentor too, because, you know, I appreciate your ideas and I appreciate your viewpoints and thoughts, and I learn from you too. So I just want you to know it's mutual. I have seen recently a lot of emails from performing arts groups that say we stand with Black Lives Matter, and they might show a photo of a Black actor that they once hired, you know, and in past productions, and I just, and then ask for money for themselves. And so that really does not do it for me. What are these steps that need to be taken? When you talk about cleaning house, what are the steps? I mean, just simply, it seems simple to me, hire more people of color in as directors, as positions of power, of administration, you know, artistic directors. I mean, it seems pretty simple to me.
Right. It's simple to us, but it's a power structure. You know, one of the conversations we're not having on an ongoing basis is about the history of theater and how that intersects with white supremacy. You know, when you really think about how we commodify what we do, you know, the arts were made for, what we know as commodified arts in America were made for and by white people. They were. And now we're here. You know, diversity has always been a marketing point, and that's something that all of us are up to speed on. When I say us, those of us who are not white, I hate to make it a us and them thing. We're all a big family here, big theater family here, but we've been working and we've been paying attention. We've been getting our foot in the door. What happens, you know, what does it mean for me to direct a show? And then I've got a producer who's on my back every other week trying to say, well, I think this should be this and this should be that. I was like, no, I'm directing from I direct through an EDI lens. I direct from my personal experiences. Let women tell their own stories. Let Black folks tell their own stories. When you got people, oh, we want a more diverse board. How accessible is your board when it takes $10,000 to get on your board? Like, what does that look like? What happens when other people have more money? What happens when white men are cutting people off, or men are cutting women off in boardrooms all the time? That is what I'm talking about when it comes to equity. Not just getting them in a room, but being self-critical of your practices and what you're willing to do to change moving forward, how you respond to these changes.
Those are all good suggestions. You know, you definitely want to give actors of color opportunities to work, but they're the least powerful voice in a production, from my experience.
They are.
And it's really hard also if you bring a director of color from another city who does not know the local community, who can't bring, you know, people of within their own community to the theater. So there's yeah, those kind of issues too, structurally, that are problematic.
I also think it's unwise to assume that everybody wants to come to your house. So, like, you know, just because you have a show here with Black folks in it doesn't mean my people want to come here. You know, what happens when they walk through the door? Oh, right this way, Black people. Here you go. No, like, you know, what does that really look like? You and I both have been in those rooms where I'm like, it's like this tap show that's happening that's like welcoming the Black person. I'm like, chill. I've seen theater shows before. Like, how do we make people feel like they're welcome here? And it's genuine. It's genuine effort, you know. That's the work that needs to happen, and it won't happen overnight. And I think, honestly, I think moving forward, instead of all these Black Lives Matter statements, I want to see more organizations saying, you know what, we haven't stepped up like we should have. We're going to hire someone to tell to help us look at ourselves, to see, be critical of what we're doing and see what we can change about ourselves as an organization. That's what we can do for Black Lives Matter. That's when Black Lives really matter.
And you're right. You know, people will ask people to do this for free. You know, they will ask, no. They'll send you email saying, James, what can we do? We're really trying. You know, can you help us? And it's like, sure, but you have to charge now. I mean, people have to charge. And I keep saying this to all theater artists or performing artists of color in general. Start charging for your advice. You know, start charging right. people for your contacts.
I have a rapport with some folks that trust me, and I will always respond. I won't go into a back and forth. It's like, this is what the problem is here. That, well, you have to think about this, and if you'd like to talk about this further, please let me know. I charge $100 an hour. Thank you. You gave me that. I actually upped it to 100, and it works. You know, people, if you're serious about doing this, then great. The thing I want to mention, though, is a lot of times, especially when you're a person of color, it's like, well, you're EDI, it's your job. Yeah, it's my job. But I'm a Black man first. I bring a lot of my personal life into this. The emotional labor alone of sitting in a room full of white people, walking them across the bridge with their feelings, it's a lot. I don't do hugs. I don't do counseling. I don't really do feelings either in an EDI room. I do critical thinking. I do dialogue, and I do solutions. The rest of that happens at home. The rest of that happens with your family. So
it is not your job unless you are paid to do it. It is not a right. person of color's job to teach EDI unless you're paid for it. Just it mm-hmm. is not your job, and you know. I just want to make that perfectly clear. And, you know, for me, when you walk into a boardroom and you have to give everybody a copy of White Fragility, then I think that's a message that something is wrong. Okay?
It is. And also, like, I mean, I don't want to be weirder about this because I have a lot of friends who happen to be white, especially during this time when you're checking on your Black friends. Just keep it short. How are you doing? Is everything okay? Are you sure? Are you great? Are you sure? Just keep in mind that I've got 3,000 people trying to do that to me at the same time. And and honestly, in my opinion, I know people care and they want to see that you're okay. But a lot of times I think that's some internalized wanting to do something. I want you to work on yourself. If you really want to help me, send me some money. If you want, send me some money. $JourneyLovePDX is my Cash App, if that goes for that. And then if you want any advice online, there's James at James-Dixon-80 for my Venmo. And I love giving information on EDI that way via private message. And I did that on purpose because people keep doing it. So it's not free.
Good for you.
Do you like that? Do you like that plug?
It's like you always have to say this. It's like there are great people, and I truly believe that there is goodness in most people, you know, but this is a problem, and it's a systemic institutional problem with so many organizations. It doesn't matter how good you are unless you change it.
Right, and especially directors, like, I think they forget our bodies are weaponized. You know, when I get on stage, I'm a Black man first. It doesn't matter what I'm paid to do. You see a Black body, and what you do with that Black body goes so far and be like, you know, there's so many things that are affected by that, that are taken into account for that. Not just Black bodies, women's bodies, like rape culture. Like, you know, we're talking about race today, but this conversation is the same when we talk about what it means. I directed a show for Photoground, and I had a deaf actor in my cast. And I, as much as I'm talking about EDI, I had to step my game up and learn how to work with this actor in a way that wasn't like too judgy and making them feel out of place, and we were successful with it. It's not that hard. Ask for help and be okay with saying I don't know, and open to feedback and open to being critical of your work.
And that is it right there. It's okay to not know. Just learn and make adjustments, you know?
Apologize, respond. It's how you respond. The response is the most important thing. Even that reporting sheet. You know, the worst thing anybody on that sheet that ends up on that sheet could do is just not respond. acknowledge, listen, and respond. Move forward. Make some critical changes.
You're talking about the reporting racism form. Yeah, and so that's it.
Yes, the reporting racism form.
I like that.
Yeah,
so let's leave it at that.
Yeah, leave it at that.
Apologize, respond. I mean, those are the two things, definitely. James Dixon, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Theater artist, activist, reporter. I mean, you do so many things. You wear so many hats. But thank you for wearing those hats. I always appreciate whenever you post anything, because you're always making people think.
I'm just trying to stay busy, and I try to put the community first and foremost as much as I can.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
When you wake up on the sea, you're sure to think of me and you. To think about paint and to think about glue, what a jolly boring thing to do. Andy Warhol, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all. Andy Warhol, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is painter Emma Garrig Scott. Her show Duck Duck Dog is on now at Froelich Gallery in Old Town through February 27th, 2021. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Emma.
Thanks for having me, Joseph. It's great to be here.
Your show consists of, I think it's in three parts. Stuff that you did early on in 2020, then a series of paintings, mainly animals on metal, the circular paintings, and then there's some gouache work at the end that you did at the end of 2020. So as people come in the gallery on the left side, in a little alcove, there are these oil on